All right, we're hot. So, last Sunday morning, Doug did an introduction to Romans, and he did the first half of chapter 1, which was Paul's introduction. Brought out a lot of good information there. Wednesday night, I did a more of a historical background of what was going on in this time in Rome, and one of the things specifically I brought out was the prophecy of Daniel, of the dream of Nebuchadnezzar that was interpreted by Daniel, and the four kingdoms, the Babylonian kingdom or empire, the Medo-Persian, mainly the Persian Empire, the Greek Empire, and in the fullness of time, in the Roman Empire, God brought forth His Son. And so that's the time that we're in, of course, in the Christian age. But this is when all those the dream of Nebuchadnezzar and the prophecies of Daniel come to fruition as far as the Messiah coming. And so as we look at chapter 1, we're going to start in verse 18, because Doug did a fine job going over the first 17 verses. We may refer back to those, but there's no need of rehashing that. And then we get the second half of chapter 1. We'll, if we have time, we'll go right into chapter 2. Okay. All right. This is the outline. You can see the underline is where we're going to be today. And if we slide over into chapter 2, we'll be at that point underneath it. The need of the Gentiles. And so sin, the need for salvation is point A there, and it covers really almost the first three chapters. The provision made for salvation, parts of chapter 3 and chapter 4. And the result of salvation, wrath, sin, and the law, free from all those, all the way through chapter 8. And then the scope of salvation, God chooses, say, believers. Israel chose to trust in their own righteousness, and both Jew and Gentile can now have salvation through faith. And then the transformed life, chapters 12 through 15, conduct, civil authority, fellow man, weak brethren, which would be, hopefully has to be an interesting discussion, and then Paul's concluding remarks. I will say that when I'm up here, and I may not look up and down all the time, but if you have a question or if you have a comment and I don't see your hand, you just say, Andy, and I'll stop, because what's on your mind is the most important thing, I think, and that way we, and maybe on other people's minds as well. So let's get it out and let's talk about it. All right. Overview of the chapter. First, we'll do an overview. This is the way it's going to flow, and then we'll go back and kind of do the traditional verse by verse somewhat. But the mention of salvation here then naturally leads to the need for all men to be saved, and that's just kind of ingrained in us, generally speaking, but not so then. Paul begins to demonstrate this need on the part of the Gentiles here in the last half of chapter 1. Paul explains that because of the Gentiles' failure to acknowledge the eternal power and divine nature of God, as revealed not in the law of Moses, but in the world around them. Paul attacks the Gentiles, so to speak, and says, you didn't take advantage of things that were around you that would have led you to worship the true and living God. And for their subsequent pride and idolatry, they were therefore exposed to God's wrath from heaven. That's verses 18 through 23. And so the point here, and we're going to get into this fair amount of detail, is that the Gentiles, from all the way back, had a chance. And they didn't have a written law, but God doesn't excuse that. They could have worshipped the Creator We're going to get to a point where I'm going to ask you some pointed questions, what you think, and I want to hear what you think when we get there about Jesus judging the Gentiles who did, might have seen, her, if there were those who did see the power of God and the majesty of God and in the creation and worship that God, what's going to happen to them? Interesting thoughts. I'm not saying I got all the answers. All right, so this wrath that God builds up against those who don't worship Him is manifested in God simply letting them reap the fruits of their vanity. Now, God did destroy the world because of His wrath one time, didn't He? Through the flood. And one family was saved, Noah and his family. And that's it. And God just kind of started all over. But He's not going to do that again. The rainbow and the cloud, as the children sing, tell us God said, I'm not going to do that again. I'm going to hold my wrath against those disobedient until the judgment. Now, that's maybe good news and bad news. The good news is we get more time. The bad news is if you never take advantage of it, then it's not good for you. By giving them over to uncleanness and the lust of their hearts, to vile passions and a debased mind, the result was such corruption that even those who knew better were caught in the clutches. These are people who didn't choose, Gentiles who didn't choose to worship the Creator. And that's 24 through 32 verses, which we'll look at in some detail. All right, here we go. Wicked men dishonoring God. In verses 18 and 19 of Romans chapter 1, for the wrath of, and I'm reading, I don't have all the scriptures up in front of me. I mentioned Wednesday night, if you weren't here, I'd appreciate it if you bring your Bibles, because I think, and if you want to look at it on your phone or your tablet, that's fine too. But if you read it in some media that you take with you, I think there's more understanding. I think it's, we learn different ways, visually, reading out loud, reading to ourselves, and other ways. And so I'd like for you to read the scriptures in whatever form, whether it's written or on a tablet or a phone or something. I'd rather you read it with me. Verse 18, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteous men who suppress the truth and unrighteousness. Suppress the truth. And so they hold down. That word translated suppressed is hold it down, like a wrestler's hold. You hold someone down. And so these ungodly people suppressed the truth, some of them, and held the truth away from other folks. In verse 19, because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident. And so as we look here, verse 19, the truth about God is evident to all men. And some people want to deny that, but if you want to look at the creation, all the creation, you know, you look at the mountains and you look at the lakes and you look at the rivers and the streams, you look at the animals and all the flora and fauna, and you think that it was done by accident, then God's going to give you up to a debased mind, stifling God's truth. And we're going to talk about that some more. And so it is evident, and we're in that subject right now. Wicked man despising the testimony of nature. For since, in verse 20, for since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes, one, His eternal power, two, and His divine nature, three, have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. So the three things here. His eternal power, His invisible attributes, and His divine nature are displayed, are on display through the things that have been created, through the creation. And so, here we have to either believe it or deny what the inspired writer said. And so there is no excuse for those that didn't have the law of Moses and didn't have God leading them by a fiery pillar and by night and a cloud by day. No excuse, Paul says. Let's see, where am I? The creation itself testifies God's invisible, and so we talked about those. So man is without excuse. No excuses. I didn't know. I didn't have a law. Yes, sir. Right. Abraham wasn't a Jew. The children of Israel were Abraham's great 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 grandchildren. Exactly. And you know that, talk about Abraham, since you brought it up, I was going to bring it up later, but it's a good time now. When Abraham paid tribute to Melchizedek, right? That was an acknowledgement of God in his life and in the world, right? And so Abraham took the time to pay a tribute, a tithe to Melchizedek, because he wanted God to understand that he appreciated what he had done and was going to serve him or was still serving him. Good point. Thank you. And so as we get comments from around people or questions, then I think it makes the whole discussion richer, right? All right, the creation itself. Wicked man is ungrateful and foolish. 21 and 22, let's read that first. 21 and 22, for even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God to the point just we just discussed, or give thanks to God, but they became futile in their speculations and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools. They outsmarted themselves. It's kind of what he's saying here. They outsmarted themselves. They were so smart and they had all these theories about this and that. But God says through inspired writing of Paul, that they thought they were wise and they were actually foolish.
And it's interesting that Paul will give you that reference that the foolishness of God is greater than the wisdom of man.
That's way greater. Yeah, God's bottom end is so much higher than man's top end that they're not even in the same universe, so to speak. Yeah, good point. That's exactly right. And so, as we think about this, ungrateful and foolish is the way God viewed the Gentiles. We're going to talk about the Jews later now. They're going to get theirs too. But the Gentiles, ungrateful and foolish. And their thoughts became futile. It's vain, useless, fruitless, wasted thoughts. Futile. Yeah, and so she was a direct disobedience of God's law. She talked about Lot's wife turning back. Direct disobedient. God said, don't look back. She turned back. And so that was a example of someone with a direct disobedience. Rebellion against God's, that's the word I'm looking for, against God's word. Because that was a time when she had direct words from God as to how to act, and she rebelled against that word. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is it. What about, I don't know if, you know, I've had this discussion with people. What about the person on the desert island or in the darkest Africa or in you know, Southeast Asia on a mountain somewhere? This is it. Yes, sir. Yep. Right.
So he's saying all the Gentiles, basically saying all of the people who weren't Jews were this way. He's not really lumping them all in one lump, but there were righteous people.
Sure. Melchizedek wasn't a Jew. There were no Jews then. They were all Gentiles. Yeah. Yep. Good. Okay. Exactly. Excellent. Thank you. Any other hand? If I miss one, y'all let me know. All right. So the thoughts became futile, which is vain, and there's a lot of synonyms there you could have. Their heart was darkened, professing to be wise, they became fools. Dark heart. Well, you get a dark heart, it's tough to come back from that. And we see people in the news that have dark hearts. There was in the newspaper, two men were arrested for a contract killing. They lived in Franklin, Kentucky. Dark hearts. All right, let's see what else we got here. Absence of the light. But there's no vacuum, right? There's no, in absence of the light of God, there's no vacuum. A vacuum sucks something in. And so if you don't fill it with God's light, then you have something dark would come in, right? Good. All right, dishonoring God continued. Wicked man given to idolatry. Verse 23. I'll start at verse 22. Professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures. You've seen pictures. Could have brought them, but we've all seen pictures of ancient Egypt and the various kind of gods, and they'd have a bird head or a crocodile body or something like that. You've seen the ancient Mesopotamians that have winged people in statues. So they worship the creature, not the creator. And so here he says that. He says, they exchanged the glory of incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling things. And so, I mean, in context, it's just silly. But they were serious about it, right? God giving up. And so once you get that far outside, what is God going to do? It's a lesson for, you know, for the Romans that Paul was writing to, and it's certainly a lesson for us. What's God going to do when you get that far out? Well, he's going to give them up to disgusting uncleanness. You say, what? God? Yep. Because Pax brought up, God, light can't exist with darkness. And Kenny brought up that God can't exist with these abominations. Right? And so if you're involved in all those disgusting and unclean things, you pulled yourself away from God. And verses 24 and 25, therefore God gave them over to the lust of their hearts to impurity, that their bodies might be dishonored among them. For they exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator who is blessed forever. And so, dishonoring their bodies and having impure hearts, 24, exchange the truth for a lie, worship the creature instead of the Creator, and give them up to, let's see what verses 26 and 27 talks about here, homosexuality. For this reason, God gave them order to degrading passions. For the women exchange the natural function for that which is unnatural. And in the same way, also, the men abandoned the natural function of the woman and burned in their desire toward one another, men with men, committing indecent acts and receiving in their own persons the due penalty of their error. Not very politically correct, is it? But I'm reading from the New American Standard, which is largely regarded as the most accurate translation. King James is pretty good. New American Standard is very accurate. That's exactly what Paul wrote to the Romans. Think about Rome now, and in the context. About 3 years before Paul found his way to Rome, down through Jerusalem and into Caesarea, and then on the boat and shipwrecked and all that, and finally found his way. It's about 3 years before Paul got to Rome that he wrote this. So it's in the context of time that we see Rome becoming evil and consumed in all of these things. It's not an accident Paul's writing all these things to the church at Rome, because the city and empire of Rome was becoming more corrupt and more debased and more futile, if you will. And we'll see some additional things here. And so he's warning them because they're in what's going to become the belly of the beast. They are in going to be a precarious situation. They may not even know it yet. You know, Priscilla and Aquila were kicked out of Rome. They expelled all the Jews, and they found Paul in Corinth and then came to Ephesus. And then they went back because they were tent makers, probably working on government contracts, good money. And they went back, and there was, seemed like a lot of congregations in the city and surrounding area of Rome. But before long, and not too long, this is late 50s, you know, let's round it off to the end to probably 60 AD. It's not long before the persecution starts in full and in force, and the Christians start dying for their faith. And so as Paul's talking to them about this, the average person, not Christians, but the average person in Rome wouldn't like this either. Degrading, vile passions, unnatural affections, committing shameful acts. And so as we continue in verse 24 through 32 then, giving them up to debased minds and all unrighteousness. 28, God abandoned them. Yeah. Yep. But God puts it, exactly, and God puts it, puts responsibility on mankind to honor Him through our actions and thoughts and deeds, so forth, right? And so, yes. Mm-hmm. Excellent point. Yep. The Sodom. Yep. Yep. Sodom and Gomorrah. I didn't think about to bring that example up. It's perfect, Dale, and it's a it's an example that I'm sure resonated for generations in the Gentile community. But I don't, you know, and it may have had some effect. Yes, sir. Exactly. Excellent point. Either you're doing your best to follow God or you're not. And that's the delineating point, isn't it? And so if we're engrossed and enveloped in sin, it doesn't matter what the sin is. This one was obviously a big deal in Rome. He was writing to them, and it's a big deal now for us, unfortunately. But if we're enveloped in sin, I don't care if it's homosexuality or devil worship. It's we've pulled ourselves away from God. I got hands up. Yes, Kenny. They were stoned to death. Yeah. Yep. Yep. And so, excellent point, Kenny. And as we see these kind of activities you're talking about, builds up wrath in God, but He's not exercising it like He did in the flood. Now He's holding it up. And we're going to see who's going to do the judging in just a minute. Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, there's whole congregations of Wiccans and all kinds of stuff today in the United States, probably closer than you think. He abandoned them to depraved minds. And so once you get depraved, God will say, I'm kind of out. And I'm building up my wrath against you because you have a depraved mind. You have given yourself over to unclean activities and all those kind of things. And let them do the things that are not proper. So into verse 28, he says, God gave them over to a depraved mind to do those things which are not proper. If you're going to go, just go. If you're going to pull away from me and go do those things, that's your prerogative. Remember, God gives us a choice to serve him or not, and we will have to bear the consequences of our choices. And that's a hard thing for some reason in our society today for get people to realize that you made the choice. You did those whatever the thing is, and you got arrested by the police, and you got sentenced by a jury of your peers to 10 years in prison for armed robbery. You made the choice, not God. And so as we sin, we're making the choice, and God's letting us if we won't bend a knee to him. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. In the garden with God, walking in the cool of evening with the creator of the universe. How better could it have been? That's right. Okay. And we're almost out of time. Let's see where we're going to stop here. If I can get a one, maybe I have a minute left. Is that clock right? They became full of unrighteousness, wickedness. You just bring a bell and I'll stop. They became full of unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, full of envy. And we'll have to take this up because if you look at it, it just keeps going on and on and on. And so we'll take up with verses 28 through 32 on Wednesday. Thank you. Appreciate the comments. I